JT, live in Vegas.
The Knights are going to the Stanley Cup Final.
If they win the Stanley Cup, it becomes one of the top four sports stories of all time.
Shot, score!
Let me repeat.
The Knights are going to the Stanley Cup Final.
If the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup, it becomes the biggest sports story of your life.
We just believe in ourselves, and that's been the key to this thing.
They were cast off. They were unprotected players.
You know, we call ourselves the Golden Misfits for a reason.
Catch save! Oh, Flurry, the reflexes!
I am in the belly of the beast of Las Vegas, Nevada. Hockey fans, take control of this moment.
You know, we're not done yet.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Oh, I love that new opening. Bobby Machado behind the board. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Vegas. Good to be back. We've been getting bumped around, but we're here today. National shows on every night. We have the Stanley Cup Final, and I'm fired up. Good to be here. Thanks to Golden Entertainment. They sponsor the show. I lead with them. I mentioned PT, Sierra Gold. I mentioned the SG Bar, Sean Patrick's, the Stratosphere, because without my good friends at Golden Entertainment, I would not be sitting here at 4 o'clock several days a month trying to light a fire under this city and reminding everybody that greatness is upon us. How does it feel, Vegas? How does it feel? Match my energy. Let's get this going. I want to call this in. We got some good guests coming in. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But there's a good hour to get on the phones. This is right before the critical game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, the basic radio show that I've done for over 22 years. My anniversary is Memorial Day, and that will be the start from 1996. I started Memorial Day, and I pulled out a few of these shows over the years. Who you got? This is a Who You Got show. Who do you got? You got the Capitals or you got Tampa Bay? Now, you want the Capitals for obvious reasons, home ice throughout the Stanley Cup Final. Tampa Bay's far away in Florida. They're not a big TV market, as I just talked about with TC as he wrapped up his show. Tampa Bay doesn't do a great job supporting their local teams. They're not going to deliver a big rating on television. Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals, I think, can. And they look really good in Game 6 in that shutout victory. They were physical. We see this game tonight. It starts in an hour. If the Capitals can stay out of the penalty box, they should win the game. I think they have the momentum. I think they could be the better team tonight and should win. But if they're sitting in the penalty box, and we're talking about Tampa Bay at home on the power play, they might win that game 3-2, 2-1. These games get really tight in a Game 7 with the Stanley Cup on the line. Remember, Vegas, you don't have to deal with this. You don't play Game 7s. Let me repeat, you have 29 days off in between games. This is a freak show. This is a fluke, the amount of time off. You don't get this type of time off. These other guys are playing 7-game series. Their cardio's worn out. Their legs are screaming. They need extra rest, and you're getting it here in Vegas. So I hope it's the Capitals. I like the way the schedule sets up. If it is, if it's not, it's Tampa Bay, and we play a week from Saturday in Vegas because it starts Monday on Memorial Day, right? You hope you get Monday, Wednesday in Vegas. We're talking about Game 3 Saturday, a week from the Saturday that I can't even see Saturday. I can't even see the finish line. Feels like it's a month away. So a lot on the line tonight. You will go to bed tonight knowing your Stanley Cup matchup. If I told you that before this team was built, or when they were building this team, that I'd be waiting around in the flagship studio, I'd be waiting patiently for 6-7 days in between every rounds to find the opponent in the Stanley Cup, you'd say, JT, what are you smoking? What are you drinking? You're nuts. So again, the show started 4 minutes ago. You should be on the radio sounding off via Twitter at JT the Brick or 876-1340. Let's go back to how they clinched and how they advanced to go to the Stanley Cup Final. This is on the short list for the greatest moments in the history of Vegas sports.
13 seconds to go. A last-ditch effort for the Jets. Up the right side, speeding into the zone. Stastny checked off on the far board. 7 seconds. Right wing shot sails wide. 5 seconds to go. On the near boards, a tie-up. 2 seconds. A centering feed, and it goes wide. And that's it. It's over. The Knights are going to the Stanley Cup Final. 2-1, the final score.
I think that Dan Duva has been exceptional all year long. Do you agree? I think he's fantastic. Coming from the Syracuse crunch and the background that he's had into throwing in this year with this type of pressure and deliver, he has been flawless in regards to his play-by-play. I think it's been outstanding overall. We're lucky to have him here. So the Knights advance. I think Jonathan Marchessault really put it into perspective of what's at stake here. Winning the West is nice, but there's still some work left.
Everybody's on point, and everybody have a taste of it, too. Like, everybody have a taste, and they just, we want more. Like, how can we be satisfied with what we did right now? We didn't, what do we got? We got a hat, and that's all. It's a good-looking hat, good souvenir, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't have the real hat.
I love that soundbite. What does he got? He's got a souvenir hat. They didn't do anything. That leads me to the hook of the monologue brought to you by Golden Entertainment. This is what the show is about for the next 50 minutes. This team has accomplished nothing. Nothing unless they win the cup. This will be one of the greatest Vegas stories of our lifetime. It will not resonate nationally if they do not win the cup. Do you agree or disagree at 876-1340? I've been doing this a long time. I've seen a lot of great teams, and a lot of teams get close. If you don't win, you're an afterthought. It'll be big in Vegas. You'll have your hats. You'll souvenirs. You'll have your jersey. It'll mean something to you. Winning the West, raising that banner. 1 October, it means something to us. But nationally, we will be forgotten. We'll be that little story about that expansion team. You've got to drink from the cup. So there's four more. Got to win them all, and then it's going to be one of the biggest parties of our lifetime. It really is. I mean, hockey parades are incredible. Detroit gets over 1.2 million. Boston gets 1 million. I don't know what the turnout would be. I don't like to tap my kegs until I'm ready. But if this happens here, I don't know how everybody, every school, everyone in this community doesn't leave work and support this team. But we're going to know about that in a couple of weeks. I love this because I think this team is now the best team left in hockey. And I sensed halfway through the regular season that they were one of the best teams in hockey. But then after they swept the Los Angeles Kings and they won all those tight games, those 2-1, 1-0 games, I was impressed and I started to think that they would probably be the best team in hockey. And then after beating Winnipeg and sitting around waiting for the Capitals or the Lightning, I'm confident that this is the best team left out of the final three. And I don't think choke comes in. Like Boston's playing tonight, it would be a choke. Boston was up 2-0. If they lose this thing 4-2 and lose 4 in a row, you believe that. The Warriors, who I'll get to a little bit later in the show, they're in a little bit of trouble. Obviously, the Warriors lost a critical game last night. They are in a little bit of trouble. But for the Knights, no pressure. The classic Vegas term, playing with house money. Is there any pressure on this team? Can you recall another time in sports history recently where you remember a team that played with no pressure at all, that had no expectations coming in? Help me out with that. Go back to what? We were talking about it on the national show the other night, Kurt Warner, when he took over for the Rams, and they won the Super Bowl. Zero expectations when Kurt Warner took over. A, they weren't a Super Bowl team on paper, and no one knew who Kurt Warner was. They end up winning the Super Bowl. Expectations on Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson? None. Zero. No one even watched it. No one knew what was happening. Mike Tyson gets knocked out. It's one of the greatest upsets of all time. Coming into the 1980 Miracle on Ice for Team USA in hockey. Nice expectations. The expectations were possibly to get to the medal round, never to beat the Russians and win the cup. They were able to do that. It's on the Mount Rushmore of greatest stories of all time. This has an opportunity to join that. I think that even the naysayers of hockey, even those who say, well, you know, hockey's not what it used to be. It's not one of the big four major sports. We can debate that, but I will tell you, this story will jump in to one of the top 4 to 5 stories of our life. And we can't let it slip away. It can't get away from us in this town. It cannot slip away. If it does, it is a blown global opportunity. Your season tickets are good for years to come. Everybody's going to be all right. The franchise is printing money. I was down at the Armory today. My mom and dad got into town. By the way, my dad's turns 80 tomorrow. Big day. My son turns 17 tomorrow. They were both born on the same day. Biggest day of the year for me. And I took my parents over to the Armory today. 2-hour wait to get in the team store. We watched a little bit of practice. And they're looking around. My dad, diehard sports fan, going, this is incredible. Couldn't believe it. But they have to deliver and win the cup. Do you believe in me that this is all or nothing on the cup? Or are you like, hey, man, this is great. It's been a great ride. No more great rides. It's about winning the Stanley Cup. Let's get out to the phones. We'll start off with Chad. Chad, thanks for calling in. What do you got?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, if they don't win, you know, all the naysayers, just the whole season and, you know, also round by round, everyone was, you know, betting against them. And if they end up not winning this cup, you know, everyone's going to say, you know, they should have tanked the season, you know, to, for the draft pick.
No, hold on, Shot. No, I don't think that's the case. I mean, everybody knows that they're a great team and they're very good. I don't think people are going to go back to this 500-1 underdog and they should have lost to get better draft picks. That you know, train has left the station. But what I think happens is, nationally, the story goes away in two nights on SportsCenter. You will never hear the story again in two nights on the national news if they lose. If they win, this could resonate with this city and this region for decades to come.
Right. Yeah, I think it's bigger than, more shocking for the, honestly, than any type of championship that was won. I mean, even just not in American team sports, but in, I know Leicester City. The soccer team, they won, and they were supposed to, that was just last year.
Yeah, let me jump in. I think, Paul used to talk about that a lot, and we got into that a bunch. That was a great story, and it was a much bigger sport at the time when it comes to that global soccer played in the Premier League. But again, I'm optimistic that they're going to win the Cup. I didn't say that before the start of the season and early in the season. But once they got, you've been listening to the show. If you've been listening to the show for the last 3 or 4 months, we started running imaging and promos talking about the Cup, talking about winning in the playoffs, talking about home ice advantage. And I think it was clear to see for the season ticket holders that was smart enough to get those tickets, not sell their tickets, and go to the games, and to see how good this team is. And that's another topic I'd like to bring up at 876-1340. When did you think this team was a Cup contender? When? I don't know when you thought it. Did you think of it when they retired the number 58 after the 1 October shooting? When did you believe, and I'll bring in Vince Sapienza, who joins us from Fox 5 Vegas. Vince, you've done an unbelievable job covering this team. You're new to the market. When did you think, actually, this team was a Cup contender?
You know, I got to say, it was probably December 19th when the Golden Knights played host to the Tampa Bay Lightning. The game where Shea Theodore scored the game-winning goal with about 2.7 seconds to go. And Vegas won 2-1. That was kind of the true eye-opener for me when you see, at the time the Lightning were the top team in the NHL, and they were the top team by a very far and wide margin. And the Golden Knights not only competed and skated and kept pace with that number one team, but they won. And I think that was the true marker where my eyes started to open up a little bit more, and the NHL started to take a little bit more notice as well.
It's interesting the way Gerard Gallant has handled expectations. You're in the locker room after the game. You preview these games. Has he given you anything all year long in regards to being a little upset, a little cranky, a little concerned? Because every time I turn on the TV or listen on the radio, it's just calm and cool, and he's just living off that message.
The only time I think I've ever seen Gerard Gallant upset or angry is anytime anybody questions Marc-Andre Fleury. If he ever has a bad game or game one in Winnipeg when they lost 4-2, somebody questioned Fleury, and he got a little snippy. But other than that, I mean, you talk about a guy who's cool, calm, collected every single day. Doesn't change what he does, doesn't change what he says. He actually says it all the time. I know you guys hate me hearing this, but it's one day at a time, one practice at a time, one game at a time. And the crazy thing about that, as mind-numbing as hearing that on a day-to-day basis, his players bought in. And that's the reason why this team has been able to compartmentalize a game from a game, a shift from a shift, a bad sequence from another, because they truly have taken on the philosophy of Turk, and that's one of the reasons he's going to be a slam dunk Coach of the Year winner at the NHL Awards here in Vegas when it's all said and done. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen or heard of a team that's bought in more to their head coach. And even the, and it's not flashy. As flashy as Vegas is, head coach Gerard Gallant is the opposite of that. But it's been a perfect recipe for success for this team.
Vince Sapienza joins us, Fox 5 Vegas, the anchor reporter, right here on Fox Sports Radio. Vince, you're used to this now, covering this team with all this rest. What have you learned in regards to covering this team on the off days, the practices, the optional skates, what they're doing in film preparation, and how they're preparing for the next round where they don't know who the opponent will be till about 4 or 5 hours from now?
Well, JT, it's really funny you ask that, because that's the exact same question I asked the players this morning. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen or heard of a team that's had so much rest in a postseason the way the Golden Knights have had during the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, it's become rest is becoming routine for them. They had 9 days between L.A. and San Jose. They had 6 days between San Jose and Winnipeg. And when it's all said and done, they're going to have 8 days between Winnipeg and whoever they face starting Monday, Game 1. And it's one of those things that they said, yeah, it's become a routine. We've earned the right to rest. And the way they play, it's not a heavy brand of hockey, but it's a fast, high-energy, high-intensity, forecheck, backcheck, pure pursuit of the puck on a shift-by-shift basis. So they're getting their legs under them. Players admitted today's practice was, even though it was just 45 minutes, was a little tough just because they had 2 days off and it felt like they were off for 2 weeks. This is a team that is hungry for every practice, every optional skate that you hear about. Most of the team is on the ice, and that's because they like to get their legs under them. They don't like being off the ice, but they enjoy the rest between these high-intense games. And as for the video work, as you were talking about, just like every team, they do their video work, but Jordan Gallant has constantly preached this entire season that they don't do a lot of it. They focus on themselves, they make themselves better, and they don't worry so much about what the other team does or does not do.
Vince Sapienza is our guest as we wrap it up. This is a big night tonight. A lot's on the line, obviously, with travel. I mean, to have to watch this game and then to quickly get on a plane, I'm assuming tomorrow, or as quick, no, they're playing, you know, they're playing Monday, so they'll probably get on the plane, I would think, no later than Saturday, if it's Tampa Bay, or maybe before that, compared to staying here in their own beds through Memorial Day weekend and then playing on Monday night. I mean, that could be a game changer. Home ice advantage in this series and playing a team that plays a completely different style, Vince, because Washington reminds me a lot of San Jose and L.A., and Tampa Bay reminds me a lot of the Vegas Golden Knights with their style. So it's going to be fun to break down whoever the opponent is.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, I don't think we're going to see them leave any later than Saturday morning. I've heard there may be a chance they even leave Friday afternoon, depending, obviously, if they're heading to Tampa or not. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think either of these teams are as heavy as maybe an L.A. Kings, like the Golden Knights have already saw. I would agree with you that Washington is very similar to a San Jose, maybe a little bit more top-heavy, not as deep as San Jose was. But I think the Golden Knights are looking forward to whoever they're playing because I think they match up pretty well in terms of the depth of the team and obviously their goaltenders. They feel really, really good about that. But Tampa Bay is obviously the most like Vegas in terms of the pace of play, in terms of the forwards, the depth, and obviously the goalie. It's going to be a fun game to watch. And if you're a medieval maniac or if you're a Golden Knight fan just sitting at home waiting to see what you want or who you want the team to play, Jordan Gallant gave the best answer. What you're really hoping for is as many overtimes as you can tonight, because the longer that goes, the more tired the legs go and the better it is for Vegas.
I'm assuming you'll have this all throughout tonight on the Fox 5 broadcast?
Absolutely.
Thanks, my friend. Talk to you next week.
Thanks so much.
All right, Vince Sapienza working hard on airplanes, covering the team, at practice, in the locker room. Really proud and happy for his success. Good guy. 876-1340 on expectations coming in tonight to the Eastern Conference Finals and what would be the better matchup for the Golden Knights. To me, it was always the Capitals. The Capitals are a bigger, lumbering team, a little bit slower, but more physical and can pound you. Tampa Bay was better than the Vegas Golden Knights in the regular season with more points, and they play that style. They can roll three really good lines and a fourth line at you. They have several goal scorers, several guys who can score and get hot, I believe, in a Stanley Cup final. But a big advantage no matter who Vegas plays because of the goaltending of Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury gives the Vegas Golden Knights a much bigger advantage no matter what the opponent looks like. Mike, you're up next before the break. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, JT, how are you?
Good, buddy.
Going into the nice expectations of the game, I think you can look at it two ways. You know, you play the Capitals, it's going to be a very heavy series. They're going to hit you hard. You're going to need to – Reeves is going to need to play the whole series just to be that fourth-line heavy man. But if you go to the Capitals, you play the Lightning. The good news is you got Tatar that's waiting to play in a series against the Lightning. So it could go either way. I mean, I think we match up perfect against both teams.
We had a good time golfing with Lon Kruger, huh?
We had a great time.
Appreciate riding around with you for 2 days, my brother. Great to get to know you. Keep calling the show. Can't thank you enough for the support.
Thanks, JT.
Mike was my partner for 2 days in Coaches versus Cancer. We played at Southern Highlands and Shadow Creek yesterday. I apologize for not being here, but I was at Shadow Creek yesterday. Duty called, and Mike is a good guy. He's a hockey player. He's got several kids who play youth hockey in this town, a really dedicated dad, and a season ticket holder with four tickets. I think he was the 76th, or he told me 75th, season ticket holder. He got the tickets in 2015. He was one of the first guys to get in line and do it, and a guy who played in Boston college hockey and came out here and said, wow, this is perfect now. I can get my family involved with this sport. And we talked a lot about the drive of this organization to set up youth hockey programs from the Henderson side all the way up to downtown Summerlin, and how committed the Vegas Golden Knights are for youth hockey to get this city playing hockey and building on this momentum. I'm not one of those guys who are going to say you're never going to see this again. It might not come around again. This team's loaded. They're loaded, and they have draft picks for years to come, and they got an owner with deep pockets. But there are many teams that have not played in a Stanley Cup final in 30 to 40 years. So I don't want to say this is going to happen every year, but I'm optimistic with the way this team has been built and this electric fan base that we'll be talking about the postseason for years to come. All right, we got a big show lined up the rest of the way into the 5 o'clock show coming up at the top of the hour. And I'm going to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights and what it means for the city and community to get it done. But coming up next, I'm furious about the National Anthem protest and the resolution that the owners came up with. I'll set the stage for the anthem and what you might do or might not do as a football fan in a stadium near you.
I see it every day at practice when you get 800 people watching their practices and the fans coming out, and then when we go to T-Mobile Arena, the building sold out. So it's definitely not one-on-one with people, but you see the fan support that we get is unbelievable. They love our players, they love our team, and they love what's going on, and I know our players appreciate the things they do for us.
Gerard Gallant, head coach of your Vegas Golden Knights. We're in the flagship studio of the Western Conference Champions, brought to you by PT's. They're 55-plus taverns. They were on board first. They got a beautiful suite inside T-Mobile. They get it. They have all these specials, food and drink specials, gaming specials, all through the Stanley Cup Final. Go to any PT's in the Valley for a great time if you're looking to watch the Vegas Golden Knights. Okay, a couple things I want to get to here before we get going back to hockey. Today, the NFL announced their new policy on the national anthem. And I've been waiting for this for quite some time because I love the anthem. I'm pro-military, I'm pro-flag, I'm pro-cop, I'm pro-anthem. And I'm never going to waver on that. Never. I'm never going to change my opinion on this. But I also appreciate everyone's right to protest. Any type of protest, as long as it's conducted in a safe environment and it's not violent. You want to protest at a football game as a player? You want to protest in the streets of Washington, D.C.? You want to protest outside your place of employment? You have the right to do it. Doesn't mean I have to agree with it, but I truly embrace your right to protest whenever you want. But I don't think you should be doing it in an NFL game. I don't think football players should be doing it at work. I don't, in a uniform, as they're getting paid to do it. That's always been my opinion, and I don't know if it's going to evolve more in the future or not. Now, there's a couple of things here about this protest and the new policy. The new policy was put into place today. This is the rule going forward. All league personnel are required to stand and respect both the flag and the national anthem. The game day manual will also be amended to allow for players to remain in the locker rooms during the anthem. Violations of the policy will result in a team fine. So let's break that down, if you will. First off, you have the right to protest in the locker room by not being on the field. So by staying in the locker room and not going out on the field, that is a version of a protest. Secondly, there will be a fine. We don't know what that number is yet. If you have 16 players taking a knee, it's going to be a bigger fine, I would assume, than one player taking a knee. And this is not only players. This has to do with coaches and league personnel, everybody involved. Now, the New York Jets chairman and CEO, Christopher Johnson, who's the son of Woody Johnson, the owner, and will be the eventual new owner, vows to pay the fines himself if the players kneel. So this is an important moment here. What I'm about to tell you is one of the owners said, the hell with this. If my players want to protest, I'll pay the fine. Quote, if somebody on the Jets takes a knee, that fine will be borne by the organization, by me, not the players. He told that to Newsday. There will be no club fines or suspensions or any sort of repercussions. If the team gets fined, that's just something I'll have to bear. So here's an owner, future owner, basically saying, I don't agree with what you guys came up in the owners committee and when they came up with this vote. Couple of things. The league is made up mostly of a majority of white owners who are billionaires, not millionaires. Some of them are really smart entrepreneurs, businessmen, and they made this decision. They did not make this decision lightly. This is probably the best decision. When you put a bunch of billionaires in a room, a lot of them make better decisions than people who don't have their ability or their money or their education or their understanding of the league and attendance to make that decision. So I respect the decision that they made. But here's what I want to ask you. What's the difference in your mind now going forward to a player who openly says he will not leave the locker room during the anthem compared to a player who takes a knee? Do you put them in the same category? What's the difference with Kaepernick taking a knee or some quarterback saying in the locker room saying, I'm not coming out until the anthem is over? I find it a tremendous sign of disrespect to not stand for the national anthem and pay attention, let alone sit in a locker. So I hope you know where I stand on this. If you don't come out of that locker room to stand at attention for the national anthem before the game starts, you are knowingly making a protest and letting everyone in the arena, in the stadium, know that you don't agree with the NFL's policy. And I think that number is going to be bigger than you think. Because players in the back of their mind are going to say, wow, I could hide here in the locker room and protest instead of having to protest in front of 75,000 people. Right? It's a little bit tougher to take a sign and walk down a street when there's tear gas going off and cops everywhere and people screaming and protest than it is to protest in your garage. So I think this is going to be a really important topic going forward. Who are the group of players who are going to stay in the locker room? And I don't mean hide. Let me put that back in context. I don't think they're hiding. I just don't think they want to go out and become the story, but they will be the story. And for the owners here, I give the owners credit. The owners said enough with this. I'm done with this. I'm not going into every home game wondering if I'm going to be embarrassed or I'm going to have to answer reporters' questions because some of my players took a knee. What'd they take a knee for? Well, you can take a knee for anything. Teachers not getting paid enough money, police brutality, homelessness, you know, anything you could take a knee for. So I don't think the owners want to tie themselves with six or seven players on the team and have to know exactly the reasons why six different players are protesting. You know, there might be someone protesting because their brother was abused by a police officer, allegedly. There might be someone protesting because they saw something on CNN and Fox News that angered them, and on that Saturday night, they decided to protest on Sunday. The league did the right thing setting rules and putting rules into place. Because if they didn't, it would just be out of control. We would have no closure. The other issue that got me going today is the president and the vice president are now tweeting and talking that they won. They won. So they believe they won this argument. Because Mike Pence, the vice president, walked out of a football game when a protest began. And the president has been tweeting at an alarming pace since the protest started with Colin Kaepernick, saying basically, and he used some pretty harsh tones and words, talking about how important the anthem was to him. So let me, again, clarify this for everybody. The White House believes they had a massive victory today because the White House was chirping about this for months on months on months, there's now an NFL rule change. If the president wasn't chirping about this around the clock, no matter where you lie politically, that might not be a rule change. I think a lot of the owners would say, hey, let's just go forward. I only got two guys protesting, not the end of the world. But the owners didn't want to see the White House talking negatively about the NFL every single week. So they basically had an emergency meeting at this owners' meetings, and they came up with this new process going forward. You're the first callers to talk about this. What do you think about this? Does this change your mind on the importance of the anthem from the military out at Nellis? How would you feel if you're there holding up a flag and there's a flyover and you notice that there's a bunch of players in the locker room who won't come out and watch the flag or watch the flyover? A lot of people don't think it's a big deal. As my 80-year-old dad told me today, he goes, I never thought I'd live in a society where so many people are disrespecting the flag over sports. And I think my dad is right. It's never been like this. It wasn't like this in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. Right where we are today, May 23rd, 2018, we have people consciously making up their minds on how they're going to protest at a football game. Are you kidding me? At a football game, that's when you're going to protest? And it's just, this is a topic that won't go away. I didn't plan on talking about this today, but the story broke nationally today. 876-1340 is the number as we continue. We'll get into more of this Golden Knights run and who the opponent could be. Who do you want? And how exciting is this game going to be tonight? Alex Ovechkin is three periods away from playing in the Stanley Cup. And with all due respect to the Golden Knights, other than Marc-Andre Fleury, if it's the Capitals, Ovechkin will be the best player on the ice. That's something to think about on Fox.
There's been talk of how could that happen or whatever. I'll tell you how it happened. They got an owner that hired an unreal GM. They got an unreal GM that hired an unreal coach. They were all left to do their jobs. They were given a framework to work with. They could have screwed it up or they could have done really well. And they chose to do really well. They played within the rules that were given to them. And this is what you get.
John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who, by the way, is a diehard Raider fan. He's huge Raider Nation, Just Win Baby t-shirts, the whole thing. JT, back with you on Fox Sports Radio. We're going to talk to Gary Lawless in a few minutes here, part of the Vegas Golden Knight broadcast, talking about the national anthem. I haven't even gotten around to LeBron James and what's going on with the Warriors because it's the best problem I've ever had in my radio career, talking hockey into Memorial Day in a town with an expansion team. Again, this is beyond a miracle. It's a sports radio and sports miracle that this is happening. I'm treating it like I just saw a miracle. Mike, thanks for waiting. You're up next. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on the anthem controversy. I look back at Muhammad Ali, and here was a guy that, you know, he protested the Vietnam War. He essentially said, I'm not going to go serve. And he was vilified. And today we look at him as a national hero for stepping up and doing the things he did back then. I do not understand the outrage of multi-million dollar athletes stand. They're not anti-military. They're not anti-flag. They're stamping up for human rights. I don't understand the
problem. Well, let me stop you for a second. I want to hear you continue. I want to hear you continue. First off, they're specifically protesting during the anthem and the flag. So they are disrespecting the anthem and the flag. If they want to protest 30 minutes before the game starts or at their locker after the game or even at halftime if they protest, if they came out there at halftime and protested, I'd be cool with it. But you can't say that it has nothing to do with the military and the flag when the flag is getting furled out on the field 100 yards long and that's when they take a knee. They're doing it specifically for that reason.
That's fair, but are you saying that they are disrespecting that's their complaint is against the American flag and the anthem?
No. I think that they're doing is they're using it. They're upset for police brutality or alleged police brutality. People always ask me, what do you mean by that? Well, I say there's a lot of times there's no police brutality. A criminal, a thug, breaks the law, harms someone else, and a cop tracks him down, and then the thug says, well, I was abused. No, you weren't. You were arrested. You were pulled to the ground. That's alleged police brutality. When there's real police brutality that happens often, and it's covered, and a player thinks he needs to protest that, he has the right to do it. I'm not knocking the protest. I'm knocking the exact time they do it. Does anybody here not get that, that they're protesting at the beginning to the actual last note of the national anthem? How could you not tie that to the anthem and the flag? If you do it 5 minutes before the anthem starts, I'm cool with it. It's the same protest, isn't it? If Marshawn Lynch, 5 minutes before the game starts in warm-up, takes a knee in the end zone, if he wanted to do that, I'd look at that as a protest. Wow, what's on his mind? If he does it during the anthem, I clearly think that that has something to do with the anthem. And I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to figure that one out. Mike, you're on Fox Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Yeah. What country you live in, JT?
I live in Afghanistan. Where do you think I live?
So my point is, we live in the United States. These are players that are getting paid by mostly United States citizens to play a game. And if they can't have the decency to acknowledge the flag and acknowledge the national anthem, then go to another country and play. Guess what? They're not going to. They're going to stay here. I'm a school teacher, and I don't require my students. We do the Pledge of Allegiance every morning, you know. And I don't require them to say it, but I do require them to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, the students aren't getting paid. But when you're getting a salary, when you're getting thousands, millions of dollars to play a game, and it's in a country where you're playing this game, at least do it for that.
Oh, yeah, let me jump in. Your phone's breaking up. I will tell you, I tend to agree a little bit with what you're saying, because they're doing it on the job for a reason. That's when they get their maximum exposure. You know, if someone wants to come back and say they're protesting during the anthem because they get their maximum exposure, I would agree with that. I understand why they're doing it at that time. That's when the television broadcast begins. That's when most people are starting to watch a football game. And it's the beginning of a global event. And they know they're going to get the biggest following at that time. We'll continue with this conversation as we get ready for more hockey talk with the Vegas Golden Knights. Gary Lawless is about to join us from the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast team. And Gary, again, since the last time we spoke and how much passion you have for this, you are now living the dream times 10 with the Stanley Cup, watching this team with the ultimate rest wait for the opponent tonight.
Yeah, it's a huge advantage, and we saw that in the Western Conference Final. Winnipeg got tired, and there's a couple of things there that, you know, if you watch closely, the Golden Knights didn't trail after game one, and that put Paul Maurice behind the Jets coach in a tough spot, because he was chasing the game all the time. And as a result, he had to play Wheeler, Shifley, Bufflin. He overplayed them. They were sacked. They were redlined. They didn't have anything left. And if you watched game four, after the sort of first surge in the third period, Vegas had no problem. And in game five, there was a little period in the first period where the Jets had a push. But after that, it was all Vegas. And being fresh and being able to use all four lines and all 6D, that had a huge factor in that series. And you have to think that the advantage in the final, with a Game 7 tonight in the Eastern Conference, will once again be in Vegas's favor.
Are you surprised we're still talking about Monday, even with Game 7 tonight here? Are you surprised they couldn't get that game going by Saturday or Sunday?
They want to do a media day.
Yeah.
They have media coming in from all over the place. They want to make sure that that whoever plays in on the other side does have an opportunity to regenerate. Like, they're not thinking, Gary Bettman isn't thinking from Vegas' perspective, mm-hmm, of, hey, let's get going. He's thinking of, I want to put on the best possible product. The Stanley Cup is four rounds. The tournament, you got to go four rounds. And it's a best of seven. And there's potential for a team to have played, you know, 21 games by the time they get to the Stanley Cup final. Vegas is 12-3. They've only played 15. They're only three over the minimum. But a team could be really banged up by the time they get here. So they do try and spread it out a little bit and make sure that the best possible product will hit the ice on Monday night when the Stanley Cup starts.
Gary Lawless is our guest. You wrote a great column for NHL.com. George McPhee's trade deadline acquisitions have proven to be valuable. Break it down for our audience on how important that aspect of those trades were for this team that's on their way to the Stanley Cup final.
Well, so first of all, McPhee followed the golden rule and dealt from a position of strength. He had a surplus of 8 draft picks between now and 2021. So he looked at all those draft picks and thought, okay, that's nice, but we're in a position to try and do something right now. So I'm going to take some of those picks because I've got so many, and I'm going to try and make the team stronger right now. So the price for Thomas Tatar was high, 3 draft picks, a first, a second, and a third. The reason it's expensive is he wasn't a rental. Tatar is under contract for this season and 3 more. So you're not just getting him for 1 or 2 picks. Ken Holland in Detroit wanted a premium because that player was under contract at a really good rate. $5.3 million, I think, is his cap hit for this year and the next 3 seasons. So McPhee made that deal. But on the other side of it, he made a deal for Ryan Reeves just using salary cap, another strength that he had. He had salary cap room. So the Pittsburgh Penguins wanted Derek Brassard. They couldn't afford to get him with the salary cap. So they passed the player through Vegas, and McPhee held on to half his contract. So he's paying for half of Brassard despite not getting the player at all. So what did he get in return? He got Ryan Reeves, who scored the winner in the Western Conference Final, and he got a 4th-round draft pick from Pittsburgh. But he didn't take Pittsburgh's. They owned Vancouver's draft pick from another trade. He took that. Vancouver is, I don't know if they were last, but right near the bottom of the league. So that 4th-round pick, that's going to be at the top of the 4th round. So now McPhee is net. His net loss on those 2 trades is 2 draft picks because he brought one more in. He sent 3 out. He brought another in. Plus, he brought the 2 players in. Tatar, who scored 20 goals or more the last 4 seasons in a row, and Ryan Reeves, who he was the antidote to Dustin Byfuglien.
Gary Lawless.
Byfuglien has in his series. Don't think that the Golden Knights weren't all bigger players, knowing that if they wanted a dogfight, they had the biggest dog in the fight. Ryan Reeves is by far the toughest player you want to have bare knuckle fisticuffs. So that changes the element. So there's all kinds of value that McPhee got for sending out those draft picks. And by the way, he's in the Stanley Cup final. It's tough to question his moves.
One more for Gary Lawless before we go here on Fox Sports Radio on the flagship. Gary, preview the game tonight because I was really impressed with not only the physicality but the shutout and the way the Caps played in such a big spot. Obviously, at home, that helps there. But the momentum that they have going into this game that's about to start with Tampa Bay, who do you like tonight?
Well, if you saw John Cooper talking after Game 6, he was, he couldn't believe the lack of engagement from his players. So I happen to think Tampa's the better team, but they got to show up. You have to have desperation. You have to have urgency. This is it. You win this game, you go to the final. You lose it, I don't know what you do in Tampa in June. Sweat. So, Get the job done, or at least put out the effort to get the job done. So if Tampa shows up, I think they win. If they play like they did in Game 6, the Vegas Golden Knights will open the Stanley Cup at home on Monday against the Washington Capitals.
How great would that be? Gary, we'll look forward to talking to you hopefully next week. We always appreciate your support. Love what you do. Thanks so much.
Love being with you. Take care, man.
All right. You got it. Gary Lawless joining us. And that's the key. This home ice is really important. Really important for them to take care of business. Get it done. Get the home ice. Hopefully everybody in town tonight should be rooting hard for the Capitals. Let's get going back out to the phones again. Here is Marcos on Fox Sports Radio. Hello, Marcos.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say it's really a double-edged sword. With this whole protest, I'm a veteran, and I believe that people should be able to, protest. It's their right. At the same time, I love the anthem. I love my flag. Maybe this whole decision they came up with is a little bit more out of sight, out of mind. If you don't want to stand, mm-hmm. you want to kneel and not do all that stuff and and have some people feel like they're disrespecting the flag, then just stay inside and let us that we do love the anthem, we do love the flag, let us sing, let us put our hand over our heart, take our hats off, scream to the top of our lungs.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. Thanks for the call. But I think the players, it's very important. This is the point I want to make as we wrap up the show, because I'm going to start again with this at the top of the hour. If you stay in the locker room and protest, I want to know who you are. There's something about steroids in baseball. Did you knowingly take them? Did you knowingly take a needle and put it into you to cheat? Good. I want to know who you are. You just can't go protest in the locker room. I need to know who you are. I want your name on the scoreboard. I want to know if you're in that locker room because you don't want to come out. You're not hiding. You're protesting. So put the names up there so I can know and debate with the person next to me and say, wow, I didn't know that cornerback was feeling this way and wouldn't come out. Who is he? Give me the program. I want to read about him. That's got to happen to be a real protest. Angel, wrap it up on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, I've been a local Las Vegan since 1964. I came to this country legally and became a proud citizen of this country in 1984. I am proud to stand for the national anthem, and it is an honor to stand for the national anthem. And these players now that want to hide in the locker room, forget about hiding in the locker room. Get out of this country and let people like me who come here legally and honor this country stand for the national anthem. You know, we only have one national anthem. We all might have our differences, but we all have to stand for the national anthem.
No, we don't. Thanks for the call. We don't have to stand for the national anthem. We have the right not to in this country, but I agree with you. I take it with pride, and I always stand. I sing. And Jed York said something interesting, the owner of the 49ers. He basically said that they're going to change their policy in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium where they're not going to serve concessions during the anthem. So if everybody's going to respect the flag and the anthem, he's going to make sure that that organization kind of follows along in the best that they can to shut down concessions, because that's pretty uncomfortable too. If I don't know about you and Bobby, you're shaking your head. If I'm at a sporting event and the anthem's going on, I'm not looking at the lady going, can I have two Bud Lights? Can I have a dog? Can I get a pretzel? I kind of stop, and I hope that I'm not next in line. I like to stand. And I usually, just me, I'm usually not the guy getting in line to get a beverage during the national anthem. I could wait a few minutes. But, hey, we all have different opinions on this, and hopefully they all evolve over the next couple of months before the start of the season. No doubt about that. So much I didn't get to with John Gruden and what the Raiders are doing in OTAs, but I'm off tomorrow. We are building a whole week of Vegas Golden Knight shows going into and coming out of Memorial Day, because this thing is going to hit fast. The game is on Monday, home or away, and that'll be Memorial Day, the holiday, and then starting Tuesday, the recap of Game 1 and off to the races. Hopefully the Vegas Golden Knights are here, the home of Golden Entertainment, the official sponsor of the JT the Brick Show, and they got you covered. Whoa, do they got you covered during the Stanley Cup Final. Food, drink, gaming, great service, great atmospheres. Everywhere you're driving around this valley, look to the left, the right in front of you, you'll find a PT's. And the SG Bar, where I go to watch sports, right at the 215 and Flamingo. Starting at the top of the hour, no Looney tonight, me and Steve DeSager. We'll set you up for LeBron versus the Celtics in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals in hockey.